Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today we're going to talk about a topic that's been bothering me for a very long time, mainly because I get a lot of traffic this way. And I sincerely believe that Google, as a search engine, is dying. Now, what do I mean by that? And Tony, maybe you can shed some light on how you use Google, but I've found Google to be much less useful in the past, like, several years, I should say.
I just told you this before we started recording. I've basically stopped using it.
Altogether? I mean, I find that hard to do, but...
Well, I mean, it's not... So it used to be you just Google everything, and that is definitely not my go-to anymore.
Yeah, and just some recent events that... So I get maybe 70, 80% of my traffic from Google, and I got hit by a Google update maybe late last year. And I've been just kind of clawing my way back into the rankings. And I've consulted a couple of my friends. Big shout out to Jeff Oxford. And I've been rewriting my posts in a much different way and getting back a lot of my traffic.
So can I just give a little backstory on this?
Sure. Yes, yes.
So a couple of weeks ago, you did a presentation in the Profitable Audience Office Hours, and you talked about these updates, and you talked about what you were doing to sort of bring back the rankings for your site.
Yes.
And basically everybody but our one CVK engineer student went into the pit of despair over this, because basically all storytelling is gone. And the way to rank, from what you taught in the class, is basically just present the information in the most factual, short, complete, concise way possible, and don't add any color commentary.
Yeah, so just to give a little bit more detail on what you just said, Google, they're designed to return the answer to a query in as concise of a way as possible, right? So over the years, Google's algorithm, I mean, it's impossible to have humans look at all the content on the web, right? It's just impossible.
Right.
So Google has honed in their algorithms based on this premise. And because it's all machine done now, the way you have to rank is you just deliver the answer without any color. Because if you start telling stories or using analogies and whatnot, it actually confuses Google and it actually hurts your rankings. So then what you end up with is just a bunch of regurgitated junk. Like if I look on the front page for the stuff that I write about today,
right,
it's clear, like in the e-commerce space, that I would say 90% of the articles that are on the front page are written by people who don't even sell anything online.
Right.
But they're giving a nice, concise answer to a question, and they're ranking.
Right. So I guess if I had a question on Google, so this is a good example. My daughter has a car that the engine went bad in it. And so we've spent a lot of time on Google trying to figure out, is this a known problem? This is one time I would use Google. So I don't want a story about someone's car that went
right.
bad. I want to know, is this a known problem? Is there a recall on this? Do we have any recourse? You know, because basically the car just burned up the oil with no warning or notice. And now the engine's dead and the car's not drivable. So it's super frustrating. So I don't want to read your story about that.
Right.
So in that way, yes, I can see. And it's nice to get on Google and just get a very concise answer to that. But I also feel in that for people who are writing about, okay, so I think this is a good example. Your MailChimp post.
Okay.
Where you have I think you still have this piece of content on your site. Maybe
it
you
is,
don't
yeah.
anymore.
I probably need to rewrite it because yeah. there's a little too much color in there.
Well, so you talk about a really negative experience with MailChimp. And to me, that actually becomes very important when I'm making a decision about email service providers. So let's just say I'm new to the, you know, I want to grab people's emails. Maybe I'm a doctor, right? I want to get an email service for my website. Well, I don't know anything about email. And so I'm going to start Googling, or my assistant or whoever's going to start doing that for me. And I need to make a decision. Well, I think in that sort of thing, the commentary is important. The color is important in that, because what happened to you, I mean, you can say MailChimp is not superior for these four reasons because Drip or ConvertKit or whoever provides these five services that I think are important. But I might say to myself as a user, well, that is not really important to me at this moment, and the pricing is better, so I'm still going to go with MailChimp. But then when I learn, oh, but MailChimp can also do this based on your personal experience, that's going to sway my decision because I've heard, it's like, I'm not going to shop at this store because the customer service is so bad, or I'm not going to eat at this restaurant because of how someone was treated or what they did. It has nothing to do with the quality of the food or
right.
The table setup, right? So I think with certain things like the car, I just needed an answer. Is this a known problem or not? Sure, it is. Okay, great. Now do I have any recourse? But when I need to make a decision, especially like a buying decision, and I'm going to find out that, well, you went with this company because the customer service is just so phenomenal, and this is the things that they've done for you, that will actually sway my decision significantly more than just price or features.
I completely agree. The other thing that's the problem is that now that it's just delivering the facts, anyone can just hire a bunch of writers, regurgitate all the stuff that's already on the front page.
Yeah.
In fact, I've been copied word for word on my posts, and they outrank me because there's also this backlink play happening.
Yes.
So what you end up with is a bunch of results in the front page that are just large companies who have the budget to pay for backlinks and then just pay these writers to just blanket the whole search engine with regurgitated facts.
Yeah. Well, and another niche that I think this really affects is think about travel.
Yes. Travel's huge.
Yeah. So travel is, and it's making a comeback now. People are starting to travel again. So you think about, okay, well, there's certain factors that come into play with travel. Price, you know, availability, ease of getting to that location. And all those things are factually based, right? If you want to fly from New York to Berlin, it's going to cost X amount of dollars on these five airlines. But you might not want to fly this airline because these three things have happened on it, or they have a policy that you don't like. But in those types of pieces of content that now rank and are going to come up first in Google, it's not going to give you the information you need to make a really good decision about where to stay, what to fly, what rental car company to use, all those things. The other things that you can't really put an actual number measurement on it matter.
Yeah, actually, let's just talk about reviews, period. I feel pretty strongly about this. I think almost every review that you see on Google now is just total bogus.
I agree.
Totally bogus and an affiliate play, like a blatant affiliate play.
Yeah.
So people who never used, I'm just talking about e-commerce tools here because I know them really well. People who don't know anything about the tools that they're reviewing will put up a review and they'll make money when someone clicks on that link and signs up.
Right.
And it's pretty blatant that some of these people don't know what they're talking about because they'll, you know, I'll read these reviews because I still read them. And then I'll come up with like this fact that's just absolutely not true or 100% false. Like if you use this tool, you would know that it's not user friendly or in this way. And it's clear that they just copied someone else because I'll read all the reviews on the front page if I'm running my own. And it's all like slightly reworded stuff.
Yeah.
But it's the same.
They're just taking the same core piece of content and just regurgitating it in a slightly different way in hopes to rank.
Right. And they're spinning it. And then if you have a large budget, I just kind of learned about the seedy underworld of SEO. But if you have a large budget, there are these networks that people just work together that you can join where they just kind of backlink to each other. But you need the budget for it. And so the large companies are just dominating these. So you end up getting a whole search engine of paid results, essentially. Right.
Well, and and in my mind, how I see this playing out is that, say, I'm a big company and I have a big budget, I'm going to create a sister site, right, to make reviews on my product that are amazing, use my budget to get the backlinks, get rank in Google, and then the review isn't just unbiased, it's written by the company.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, like Amazon had that similar problem with fake reviews, right?
Yes.
I mean, Google has the same problem, but why isn't this against FTC guidelines when it's in the search results? Like Amazon reviews, like fake reviews are illegal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So why aren't fake Google reviews illegal also?
I've
always wondered that.
That's actually, I've never thought about that, but that's a really good point.
Because I know like, the, you know, Casper Mattresses?
Yes.
They got caught for just paying, or maybe it was the blog writer, was just kind of...
Yes, I remember this.
Pit them against each other, right? And try to get the highest bid. And they got caught.
Yeah.
I don't remember what happened, though.
But, and that's the thing that is frustrating to me, is that especially when so many people have moved to like online shopping and online decision making, is that the companies with the biggest budgets can win even with products that aren't superior because they're just paying their way to the top.
Yep.
Which is why I think sites like Yelp and TripAdvisor, it's like that, where the reviews seem to be still a little more genuine. Now, I know like they'll have people go on and but like almost every restaurant that I've been to in the past couple months has said like, hey, if I say, this has been a really great experience, or the manager, you know, sometimes the manager comes by the table just to say, hey, how's everything going? The times when I've said, hey, this has been really great, I love this place, I will often get, hey, would you mind leaving us a review on Yelp? And I think it's because they're trying to combat some of that fake stuff on Google.
Right. Or the fake stuff on Yelp too, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I feel like on Yelp, it's pretty easy to...
You can tell actually a fake review from a real one on Yelp, yeah. I think.
I think on Google, it's getting hard. Because sometimes when I do search, I'll get through about half the article and then realize that, oh, wait, this is just totally written by... Not a bot, but maybe. I don't know. I don't even know how that really works, but it's not trustworthy to me.
I mean, the most blatant ones are the ones that it's... I hate to say Chinese, but I think maybe they're responsible.
Yes.
But it's obviously like someone who doesn't speak English well, and they're just kind of copy. Maybe it's because I've just been copied blatantly a lot over the years. Here's the most telling stat, though. I can't remember what the exact percentage is, but it's a significant percentage of Google queries now have the word Reddit at the end.
Oh, so, yes, you talked about this.
Yeah, so it'll be like Shopify review Reddit.
Yeah.
Because on Reddit, it's like real people. It's hard to sift through all the garbage on Reddit, though, is
yes.
the problem.
Yeah.
But at least you get like a real opinion of someone who's actually used the tool. They might be heavily biased if they had a really bad experience, but at least you can get some color to the review.
Yeah. Well, and even like I actually don't mind the really bad reviews that are real, because it's actually become a running joke between me and my boyfriend, is that we were going to go to this restaurant. I was reading the reviews, and there was this person who left this scathing review because they ordered the risotto, and the risotto was market price, which I think is interesting for risotto, but whatever. And it ended up being very expensive, right? And so they just like ripped apart the restaurant over the market price risotto. Well, then we go eat at this restaurant, and the risotto is like has like baby octopus in it or something. It's like some weird ingredient that clearly like is gonna. And once you hear that, you're like, well, that's why it's gonna be expensive, because it's like black truffle baby octopus, right? So it's become our running joke. It's like, what's the market price for the risotto here? Well, that's how we decide if we're gonna go. But like you can read those reviews and realize, okay, this person's just salty because they didn't realize if they ordered that it was going to be $62 as opposed to, you know, a $10 side of risotto.
Right.
But I think when you start, like even on Reddit, you can get through the reviews and the bad ones. You're like, okay, well, that makes sense, but I don't care about that. So that's not, I can still move forward with that product. Or, you know, I like the ones for the mattresses where people are like, oh, this mattress was so hot. Well, those people are like hot sleepers, right?
Right.
And so, like, mattresses are very particular to, like, how you like to sleep and your preferences. So you can read bad reviews on mattresses and go, well, that sounds perfect for me. I want a super soft mattress that I sink into, right? Whereas
right.
someone else is like, this is the worst mattress ever. I had to go have back surgery. But, you know, that's the nice thing about reviews with color in them, is because you can actually sift through them and figure out, like, well, that actually might work for me versus something else.
By the way, I never order anything on the menu that says market price.
I don't either.
But like, scares me.
But the review was like seven paragraphs about this risotto. And I'm like, this person is so angry. And to me, like, I also think if you're going to order something without a price, it's not bad to like ask, hey, how much does this run?
That's you know? True. I always do. And then I always try to keep a straight face when they tell me.
Yeah,
like
you're
real.
Like, what?
It's like, you know, I'm not in the mood for that tonight, actually.
Yeah. You're like, $82 an ounce? Oh, well, I'm kind of full.
So. I actually did that with steak once, where I ordered, you know, the Wagyu.
Yes.
And I thought it was like a real steak. I didn't realize the price was per ounce.
Oh.
Right? So it just had the number, but in the fine print under the description, it was
said per ounce.
Yeah. So he was like, how many ounces do you want? I was like, oh, I'll have like 8 ounces or 10 ounces. And then we came back. The bill was huge. I was like, oh, my God.
And it was tricky. Like, I'm gonna have to trade in my car for this meal.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I have to laugh about that with you because do you remember the time we were at a steakhouse? I think we were in Florida, actually. And I ordered the, I always get the, when we go to steakhouses, I always get the filet every time.
Right.
And I never finish the filet. And so I always order the smallest one. So it's like 6 ounces or 8 ounces because there's usually like a 6 and a 9 or 8 and a 12.
Right.
And I order the 8 ounce filet and you almost put a fork through my hand. You were like, are you kidding? The price per ounce is so much better for the 12. You're like, order the 12 and I'll eat your leftovers.
That's true. I was being selfish there because I know you never finish.
I know. You're like, you never finish it no matter what size you get. So now I know with you, I always order just the biggest one and you'll, because per ounce, it's a way better deal. But all that to say, I think that's the part to me that's so frustrating about these. I don't know how recent they are, but about these changes and updates is that I feel like it's taking. Yes, there's some things where just the facts matter and nothing else, but for the user, what does this mean long term? Is everyone going to be flocking to like TripAdvisor and Reddit and Yelp to and even Amazon? Because I think on Amazon it's easier to spot the phony reviews now than it was before. Because I told you before we got started, I basically use Google for very specific factual questions and maps. You know, like how far away am I from a steakhouse? And you know, I don't really use it for a whole lot else because I feel like the answers are so. And if this is the other thing, when I do use it for facts, I don't usually even click through because it says it in the first, says it in the meta description.
Yes. Actually, for webmasters, that's not good also, right? Google is taking the content and putting it up at the top.
Yeah. I don't even click through. Yeah. So I don't know what's the future other than sadness?
The future is just a bunch of regurgitated junk. I mean, the future's already here. It's already like that. I mean,
if
you search for anything. Now, it's basically an arms race of large companies who've hired writers to just either regurgitate. Because like in e-commerce, you in order to do a review, you actually have to use the tool.
Yeah.
But none of the reviews, I don't want to say none, but most of the reviews on the front page of anything related to e-commerce is just bogus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the whole Reddit thing is just evidence of that, right?
Yeah.
Here's what it does from the perspective of a writer, though, right? So I used to tell stories of my experiences using the tool, but it actually hurts you now in the rankings. Now, let me just give you a quick example. So let's say you use analogies or similes like, oh, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, for example.
Right.
If you were to write that in a post, Google would be like, huh, does this post have to do with bread?
Right.
Or the slicing of bread? And then that just kind of it just kind of interferes with their algorithm and their ability to categorize things. So instead of saying something like that, now you just have to say, this tool is great because, or something, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, that's annoying to me.
And if you can sum it up in like a single sentence, you have a much better chance of getting that featured snippet that you were talking about,
right,
where you get the answer right away.
Yeah. But then no one clicks through. Not nobody, but
well, people will click through. I mean, it's more prominent, but I mean, that's got nothing to do with it. It's just the fact that everything on Google now is not written by people who know what they're talking about per se.
Right.
Any longer. And if this persists, I mean, think about it this way. If I want to get like a good product review, then am I going to go on Google now where someone's getting an affiliate commission off of something?
Yeah.
Or am I going to go somewhere else? Like you mentioned TripAdvisor or even Amazon. For a more legit review, because at least that person paid for the item before leaving that review, right?
Well, and I feel like just using Amazon as an example, even though there are some reviews on there that are clearly done by people who got compensated to purchase the product still, I don't think Amazon's eradicated that problem altogether. I think if you read through enough of them and you're smart about it, it's pretty easy to tell who's giving you an unbiased review. And who's not. The other thing that I think that becomes really important is that this is why I think getting people from other ways to basically follow you and engage with you, basically having that community. Like, think about this. Let's just say you have a Facebook group of people that are really passionate about e-commerce. I mean, you do have a Facebook group. But, you know, and so those people know you, they've listened to your stories, you go in there, you're active, and I'm not saying a Facebook group is the answer, but let's just say you have this. then when you come in and say, hey, there's this new product. I know you did a big review a while back on that new like Shopify competitor, like Shift for Shop.
Oh, careful. You always
I know.
Screw up.
I always almost. What's it called?
Shift for Shop. Yeah.
If you go in that Facebook group, you know, and you have 20,000 people in the group and you say, hey, there's this new product. It's a competitor to, you know, these other platforms. Here's what I like about it. Here's what I don't like about it. You can read the full post on my site, but your post is kind of Googled out, right? But in the Facebook group, you can then give more color and information. Like that actually becomes very, very valuable. Same thing if you have a popular YouTube channel or a popular TikTok channel or you have Instagram followers. Like that all of a sudden to me becomes more valuable for people to actually make decisions, especially purchasing decisions based off what you say.
Yeah. So in that respect now, the way my strategy has shifted is all my posts are just really, I mean, I hate to say this about it, but they're kind of boring to read.
Yeah.
Because when you just give the facts, it's kind of boring to read. And then I use like video and podcast to add color, or I'll post about it. Because on YouTube, it matters less, right? It matters more about the user metrics. Google, the regular search engine used to be that way. I'm sure they still take into account user metrics in their rankings. But I think the topic and the way you present the information is much more important in Google today.
So is there, this just gave me an idea, because I hate this with a passion. Like I'm not willing to change how I write. And if I don't, if I lose my Google traffic, I lose my Google traffic. Like I'm not, that's not what my site's ever been about. And that's just not, and I don't get, like I'm not, I don't have the same type of site as you do where people are really searching for like direct answers. A lot of times people are searching for someone that's like going to come alongside them and make them feel better about what's going on in their life. So, but if I was willing to make some changes, which I will probably do a little bit, to me, why wouldn't I embed a video on every single post where I could then add the color?
Oh yeah, you absolutely should. Yeah.
Like to me, that's the solution. I don't, it doesn't sound like a great solution, but that to me, that's the way to combat some of that, because I think that stuff matters. And like, if I like you and I've connected with you, and even though I don't know you personally, I'm going to take your advice on something. I mean, I've bought a decent amount of things on the internet because I like the person who, like if someone's like, oh my gosh, I just tried this makeup and it's so amazing, blah, blah, blah. And I've never met them in real life, but I've appreciated other things they've done. I'm going to go buy that. I just bought makeup like maybe a month ago from someone that I follow, because I was like, she always gives really good tips. So I'm going to trust her.
Yeah. I mean, the other alternative also is to do all the storytelling in email, right?
Yeah.
In your email marketing when you send it out. I think for your blog, like you can't really write this way. Otherwise, like your stuff will have no personality.
Yeah.
I guess my strategy now is to get people in through search, get them on my email list, and then show off the rest of the stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm doing a lot more video. But, you know, if you're just like a pure writer, what are you going to do, right? And you don't want to be doing video or whatnot. So if you want Google search traffic, you're going to have to conform to this new way of writing. And I'm not saying that you can't tell stories. You know, you can answer the question in the first sentence and then add color to it. But if you just kind of go off in tangents, like that example with sliced bread, stuff like that will confuse the algorithm in general. So
I feel like this makes us sound like old people that are like, get off my lawn. But I actually miss the olden days of blogging. Like back when you and I first got started, where like I read J.D. Ross, Get Rich Slowly, not because I really needed a lot of financial advice, even though he did give decent financial advice, but because I wanted to hear like how much longer he had to work at the box factory and, you know, what was he going to do with that old house he lived in? And what about that weird cat that he had? Like, I became really invested in his life, and I, you know, I got good advice from him too, but that was sort of secondary to the fact that I just found him really interesting and I wanted to learn more about him.
I agree. And actually his, he used to rank and search for a lot of terms. He used to dominate the search results. If you look at it now, and maybe it's turned around, I haven't looked at it recently, but it tanked when Google started implementing these algorithms.
Because he's a writer.
Because he's a writer. He's not a regurgitator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that part makes me sad, because I feel like it takes away from some of the, and part of that's just the nature of content creation, how it's gone throughout the years. Like the community has moved off of like the comments of the blog into like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Like people are, like when you go on TikTok and you look at some of the bigger creators that get 2,000-3,000 comments on their videos, like there's the communities in the comments. People are going back and forth with each other. I know, like, if you, like, one of the things you can do on TikTok, and I don't necessarily think this is like a growth strategy for TikTok, but if you make a comment on TikTok that people think is funny, your followers are going to go up. People are going to start interacting with you on your own TikTok. Like, the whole community is in there.
I haven't mastered that aspect of it. So you actually make comments on...
I comment on a lot of people's TikToks.
Interesting. Okay, and that gets you followers?
I don't do that to get followers, but what I noticed is there was a couple TikToks that I commented on just because I thought they were so funny, and I just felt like, oh, I just want to, like, and people were comment, because, you know, some of those TikToks are literally made for people to make comments, right? Mm-hmm. And the comments are funny. And so I posted something and it got like 45 likes. My comment got 45 likes. And then I noticed people were either responding to my comment or people were like, my follower count increased. And I was looking at the people that were following me, and like they came over from that other person. So I don't think that's like, I'm not saying that so people can go like spam big creators or anything like that. But I do think, you know, that's where the community has moved. Whereas before, like in 2008, 2009, like when I was looking for something, an example the other day, and I went back to some really old posts on my website, and, you know, those posts have 30, 40, 50 comments. People are responding to each other, especially on like recipes. Like one lady, I found one that was, she was like, I don't know how you could possibly want, you know, raisins in this recipe. And another lady's like, well, I don't use raisins, I use cranberries, blah, blah, blah. You know, and there was like all this back and forth, but it was all in the comments of the blog, which doesn't have, it still happens on some people's sites, but not very often.
Yeah,
anymore.
I think most people have actually turned comments off, I've noticed,
yeah,
on their blogs. Yeah. All right, so answer me this. Like, you know, I actually talked about this with a colleague the other day, and they were like, actually, Google's not broken based on what you're describing. I mean, they're giving me the answer that I want. I think fundamentally what's broken are like the reviews, come to think of it. Because we talked a lot about reviews here.
Yeah.
And everything's incentivized.
Yes.
All the reviews are incentivized. So there's just something inherently wrong with that, I think. Like, whenever money's involved, things usually go to crap.
Yeah.
That's so
accurate. Well, I think that's where this hurts people. I don't think it hurts you to Google something and like, how do I replace an air conditioning filter?
Yeah, that's perfect. Google's perfect for that.
Yeah, like, yeah, just give me, literally tell me exactly how to do this. And I don't want to hear about how your house has a 15-year-old unit. You know, I need to know how to replace this specific filter in this type of unit, whatever. But I think when you need to make a decision, that's where it hurts you. So whether it's a buying decision, should I go eat here or here? Should I take this trip? Should I use this email service provider, this email service provider? That's when I think it really does hurt the user.
And incidentally, that's where the money is too.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And
no
if
one's
you,
making money off air conditioning replacement.
Yeah, off those tutorials. So
yeah.
In that respect, I mean, if no one can trust what they're seeing when they need to make a decision, then that's a problem. For Google. I actually only use Google for quick facts. I shouldn't say only, but most of the time I just, hey, like how many points, like what's Steph's, 3-point average for the life? I'll do searches for that. But
well, so I find that we use it a lot for like someone will make a, like I was out one night and there was some weird, you know, they have TV screens at restaurants and there was something about ravens and someone was like, oh, you know, ravens can identify faces, right? And I was like, no, they can't, you know? And so, like, you go to Google, like, can ravens identify faces, right? Like, you're trying to, like, prove yourself right, really? Like, that's when you use Google. That's what I think. It's like, sure, yeah, can they? Yes or no? Oh, it's from National Geographic? Believable, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's an okay use of it. And I think even if it's just regurgitated crap, as long as it's truthful...
Yeah.
Which, why wouldn't it be? You know, I'm not going to check Bob's Raven site for that, but.
Well, I mean, there's a credibility issue there too, right? What if you're getting conflicting results? And I don't know if Google can do a really good job. I guess it's backlinks, which can be gamed.
Yeah.
The other thing, the reason for these algorithm changes has they've actually grown these tools that allow you to rank and search. So this is one I'm thinking about, Surfer. What it does is it looks at a topic that you give it, and then it tells you like what frequency you should use these certain keywords in your article in order to help Google classify your site better. So literally the way people use this tool is they'll write their post and it'll say, hey, you need to use the word Shopify 3 times.
Yeah.
Right. Or you need to use, you know, shopping cart or e-commerce platform. Yeah. And so it just has given rise to tools like these that people use to actually start ranking. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old man, but
we are. We're just two old people. Maybe
people love this. Maybe this is like the best thing that Google's ever done. But I just know for myself, like when you can't trust what's being output anymore, then that's a problem. What is your go-to actually when you want to make a decision then?
I will go to wherever I can find the reviews that are not on Google. I don't use Google reviews.
Okay.
So I'll even go to Facebook and read Facebook reviews because, you know, some people allow reviews on their Facebook page. Now, I know those can be deleted and stuff. But, you know, for me, it's almost always Yelp or TripAdvisor or because that's the type of stuff I'm usually searching for. Or, you know, the other thing I'll do is I'll go to YouTube and look for tutorials on it. And, you know, based on the, and I'll watch through, if, as long as the tutorial is not like 25 minutes. Because if someone's doing a tutorial on it, then I can see more about it. And you can, it's hard to, especially if they're talking, unless they're really, really good, it's hard to game that because they're using inflection. And so you can kind of tell when there's like hiccups and things like that in a video, in my opinion, like if they're doing like a tutorial or a review type thing.
Yeah.
And then I read through the comments there sometimes. Or I'll go to, I read a ton of Amazon reviews, even if I'm not buying it on Amazon. Or like, so if I'm buying a piece of electronics, I had to buy, I think a TV a while back. And I went on, I read it on Best Buy. I read on Amazon. I read on Sam's Club because they sold the same TV. And I read the reviews on all those sites. And I figure if I do that, then I'm getting enough of an unbiased window. Yeah. But also like, I don't. Like, that's not a great use of my time. I mean, I usually do it when I'm in bed or whatever. Like, it's not like I'm spending my, you know, 9 a.m. I'm going to go read TV reviews for 45 minutes. But, you know, I would never just go on Google and say which TV to buy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'll start watching YouTube reviews.
Yeah.
Because usually they'll start or they'll have like clout in the form of subscribers. Yeah. Like, they're known for this. And so I can trust their reviews.
Yeah, if you have 100,000 subscribers and you're making a video on something, like, I'm probably going to trust you to at least be at some. And usually I feel like on YouTube, for people at that level will say, like, hey, you know, I got this for free, you know, because you have to, right? There has to be some level of disclosure. Whereas on Google, you don't have to say, hey, I'm a sister site for this brand and I'm making up reviews about mattresses.
I mean, basically what Google needs to do, now that we're talking about this, is turn regular search into YouTube search, right? Because if you have subscribers, that gives you a form of clout or social currency. And then Google can actually share articles based on what you're watching and who you like.
Yeah.
I guess that's not really a search engine at that point, but I guess it kind of is, right? And it's also a suggestion algorithm. It's like a TikTok kind of with for Google.
But don't it's you... Posts. Maybe I'm totally wrong on this, but I was under the impression that we did get our search results are biased based on our history.
They are.
To some extent.
Yeah. But I mean, for like a new query, it is biased. But if you go to like the same site over and over again, they are biased. That's correct. But what I'm thinking about is different. Like the way YouTube does it, like when I watch something, instantly on my homepage, I get like two videos for that. And then I can tell if they're legit by just kind of looking at their intro video and their subscriber count, right?
Right. Yeah. I know everything that you watch because I have access to your YouTube channel.
I know you do. I got to be careful what
I
watch.
How many NBA videos can you possibly consume in a day, Steve?
Oh, my God. Is it that many?
That's all that's ever up there. I laugh. And then there's always like a really weird random like best wedding intro dance ever. There's like always some... There's always a really weird like outlier, which makes me laugh because it's like Steph Curry hits from, you know, the 3-point line of the other team, like all this stuff, right? And then there's always like one like best vacuum cleaners.
See, that's scary because you can actually learn a lot about someone's personality based on what they watch on YouTube, right?
You can, although I typically am only on there to grab a link.
Of course.
But every once in a while, I'll like watch a video on your YouTube just because I forget that it's like I'm logged in as you because I was in there to get the link. And like I'll watch like I think when the tennis was going on, you had a bunch of tennis videos up there. It was one of the tennis tournaments. And so I ended up watching like two different tennis videos. emails, and I was like, crap, I just screwed up his entire algorithm.
Is this why I get the occasional DIY
refinish
your cabinet video?
Yeah, that's why you have all those replace your floor videos in there now. Okay, so like to sort of wrap things up, if you are a content creator and this is not how you've been writing, which I would say is probably most of the people that listen to this podcast have not been writing this way with the just the facts, ma'am. How do you compare? So I think everyone knows how to do this. This isn't something that's hard to do. This is actually very easy.
Right.
But I think the hard part becomes, and this is not fun. I don't want to do this. Like, if this is what it is, then I don't want to create content. So how do you combat that? Because you've kind of walked through that a little bit.
Actually, I just came to the conclusion the other day that I'm going to start hiring some writers because, you know, my value is, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to hire writers to just dig up the facts for me, and then I'll go through it and add my own color like at the end of the post. Like, so Google values the content or the topic of the content higher, you know, when you're writing it higher up in the post. The stuff further down matters less. So I'll just like put out the facts, answer all the questions, and at the end, I'll give my own personal commentary. I think that's how I'm going to do it from now on.
I think for me, what I have to do is just... most of my stuff cannot be changed, but on the things that can, I think I'm just going to have to make videos and embed them.
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to help your search results that much. I mean, it will keep people on longer, but...
it won't help my search results, but it will keep the... because I don't... what it will do for me is it will continue to keep my personality in it more versus, you know, just the facts, because that's not appealing to the people that have followed. I mean, I have people that have followed me since day one, still follow me today. And if I just put stuff out there like that, I would lose them. And I don't want to lose those people.
Yeah.
Those are the people that still click through and buy stuff through my links. So I don't want to lose my most loyal people. But I think I can make some small adjustments, especially to certain, like I have posts like how to pay cash for a car. Well, that one can be way more factual versus the color commentary that I have in there right now. But then I can add that back in through video is what I'm thinking.
I think the best way to proceed, or the way I'm going to do it also, is to just draw people in with the facts, get them on the list, and then point them to videos. I'm going to embed videos, obviously, also, which I've been doing anyways. It's just best practice. But once you get them on your email list and your webinars, that's where you show off your personality. I think live is really important, actually, for that. Or some sort of social media. Yeah.
I think all of you old school guys that shied away from social media are being forced out of the closet.
I know. I hate it, actually. I really hate it. Like, I don't... It's kind of like a pet peeve, like when I go out to dinner with someone, and like usually it's polite, like you wait till everyone gets their food and then you eat at the same... you start eating at the same time. But then they'll like take photos of their food for like 5 minutes, and I'm just sitting there waiting.
You can just tell me to stop doing that. You don't have to say it on the podcast.
I mean, I'm just not the type of person to document everything that's going on day to day.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to do that.
Yeah, I don't think for what you write about that's necessarily as important. But I do think this just hammers home the importance of email, the importance of having another channel where people can actually get to know you and get to know your personality. Because at the end of the day, especially if you sell a course or coaching or membership site, your personality actually matters a whole lot. Because there's a lot of people out there that sell e-commerce courses, and there's a lot of people out there that sell content courses. So people pick us, one, for the quality of the content, but two, because they relate to us, they feel comfortable around us, they feel like the way we present things is the most relatable to them, and that's why they make a decision to buy from us. And if they don't see our personality, they can't make that decision.
Yeah, and actually, if any of you guys have been reading my blog lately, I'll try to insert what I call like we call it a fluff piece, but it's more like a rant or a commentary. I'll insert those at least like once a month just for the readers, whereas all the other stuff is usually for the search engines. I mean, unfortunately, I had this mentality now where if I'm going to write a post, I want people to see it, right? And the best way to do that is through Google search. But you also have to satisfy your existing folks that are on your newsletter as well. So it's a balance.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.